Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and after a couple of weeks hiatus, the Metsian podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike is now back on the air, and we are thrilled that you are joining us for our episode tonight. So let's see. Our last episode, I believe, was in early October. So since then, what has happened? Well, the Atlanta Braves have won the World Series, which is painful for me to say. The New York Mets have talked to a lot of people about becoming a GM and come up empty. Free agency is swirling around. There's a collective bargaining agreement that's set to expire in about 3 weeks, and we are going to unpack all of it this evening. And to do that, let me bring on my two partners in podcasting. First, let's see where I want to go. Well, let's start in the hub of the free world. Well, let's go to the island of Manhattan, bring on our grand poopa of podcasting operations, Mr. Stan Maxwell. So, Sam, how are you tonight? What have you been doing for the past month?
Oh, my God. What have I been doing? I mean, you know, I've been periodically checking on the playoffs. Of course, the World Series was certainly painful. I was rooting for the Dodgers to get there, of course. And, you know, I know how everybody, you know, some people just wanted the Dodgers out so we could interview Josh Byrne faster. But that we'll get to all of that. And I really like the way you said the hub of the free world, Rich. I think that's a first there. That was good.
Love it. Thank you. Appreciate that. And in a borough of New York City, just to the, to the west of Manhattan, we have the borough of Brooklyn, and we have our third person from podcasting here, Mr. Mike LaColin. So, Mike, how are you doing tonight? How's the borough of Brooklyn? And what have you been up to for the past month?
Let me just say that, you know, life has been throwing me a lot of off-speed pitches, so I'm just trying to foul them off and wait for a good one to hit. And when I do, you'll know about it. But, you know, Brooklyn is a very unique place. Something major happened this evening on the Bell Parkway, not more than perhaps an hour ago, maybe more. I'm sure you'll be hearing about it on the evening news. Somebody died. Could have been suicide by cop for all I know. I'm still trying to educate myself on the story, but somebody was going the wrong way in the Bell Parkway. Helicopters, cops, insane traffic locally, everyone trying to bail out of the Bell Parkway. So it turned into an interesting afternoon. Sorry to bog you down with all that, but it was just topical.
Oh, goodness, that's not good. So, well, that's why we have sports, right? We have sports to help distract us from the real world and the unfortunate kinds of things that tend to happen. And, you know, we've all lived that for the past 19 months, right? So to help us talk about the Mets, we have a first-time guest tonight on our podcast. We're thrilled to have him. So I'd like to bring on Mr. Jake Brown. Let me tell you a little bit of bio on Jake. Jake is the executive producer of the New York Post podcast, including Amazing But True with Figueroa. He also hosts the Jets one, the Rangers one, and the Giants one as well. So, Jake, we are thrilled to have you tonight with us on the Metsian podcast. So welcome to our show. And if you could tell us just a little bit about what you do and where people could find you.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I got to bring myself up after that accident story. My goodness, that escalated. You know, that's near me here, and good, you know, the west to the east boroughs. I cannot figure out a map. Like, is Brooklyn to the east of me in a story? Is it west? So that's impressive. I've lost all sense. I know Subway sense of direction, but when it comes to east, west, north, south, I'm like, everyone's like, where in the story are you? I'm like, I don't know the directions of a story, east Astoria. Who says that? But thanks for having me. We are in hiatus, so it's nice to talk about the Mets tonight because Amazing But True has been we've been gone for a month. You know, you stop the show, you know, you do shows when big news happens. It costs money. So it's, you know, all comes down to the almighty dollar. But all is well. Yeah, I produce all the New York Post sports podcasts. So we have Mets, Yankees, Jets, Giants, Rangers. We're working on Knicks and a little rebranding. So we'll see. There might be news on that coming soon. But, yeah, I do the Mets and Jets show, and then I'm like the third voice on Giants, Rangers, and Knicks and all that. So it's a good time. And not a lot of good things to talk about right now with the Mets. It's just been a lot of people saying no to this team, you know, people deciding it's not for them, or going down the wishing well of guys from 4 or 5 years ago. But we'll see. You know, all this is rumors and stuff, and we'll wait till the actual news comes out before we throw our hands in the arms and get mad at Steve Cohen.
So, all right, Jake, I'm going to start with you on this one, and let's tail right on to what you just said. Okay, we know that a lot of people have – well, the Mets have been turned down at times. Other people like Raquel Ferrara from the Red Sox, she expressed that she was not a good fit for her. Theo Epstein, same thing. When the Mets reached out to the Brewers, they were turned away. So it's been a variety of things. But the bottom line is the Mets have done a lot of reaching out. They've either been rejected by a team with whom someone is under contract, or they've been rejected by that potential candidate, him or herself. So here's where I'm going with this, and this is what I would like to get your comment on. Yesterday, Sandy was at the GM meetings, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, it's not working for Steve Cohen that's the problem. He even said, it's not me, that's the problem. He said a lot of people are comfortable where they are in life. You know, they might not want to move to New York, which, okay, that happens. But he also said that it could be a career-damaging thing if you come to New York and you fail under the bright lights, that people might look at it as, you know, you failed, everybody watched you fail, and then your career's over. And, of course, I'm paraphrasing. So here's my question to you, and then, of course, to Sam and Mike. Nice job of deflection, Sandy. You know, Sandy's saying, nothing to look at here. Don't look at me. Don't look at Steve. It's this big, ugly metropolis of New York. And I think New York's beautiful, by the way. But it's this big metropolis of New York that people are afraid of. What's your reaction to that, Jake?
I mean, it's a bunch of baloney. I mean, when has that ever been the main thing? Oh, we're not going to go to the Yankees. We're not going to come to the Mets because it's New York. Of course, that's always in the back of people's minds. But when does that become the number one story for people turning it down? It's, of course it's on him. And it didn't make any sense that the Mets kept Sandy here if he's not the long-term guy. Why is Sandy Alderson, who might be gone in a year, deciding the future of the Mets beyond that year that he is here? So that makes me think maybe Sandy's just going to stay as GM one more year. They'll redo the search next offseason. They'll go with guys in-house. You know, maybe guys with him will have a bigger role. Maybe Omar goes from ambassador to, you know, GM for the short term. At this point, that's probably the better move than going to these outside options who haven't been in the league in years. But this is majorly on Sandy and Cohen. Listen, Cohen, it's out there that he doesn't know a ton of baseball people, and Sandy's his right-hand man. You know, Sandy's the one signing the permission slip. Sandy's the one holding his hand off the school bus. And that's not a knock on Steve Cohen, but, you know, he just doesn't know a ton of baseball people, so he's going with the guy that he knows and that is guiding him. While he may not be that right guy, there's been, you know, red flags has been the new thing on Twitter. It's everyone, you know, this is a red flag. She's a Yankees fan, red flag. Everything's a red flag. Well, there's a lot of red flags that have come up with Sandy over his tenure, especially the last year, 2 years. I mean, you guys know the long list. So he hasn't exactly had the best track record of bringing guys in here. So how is that on New York? You know, we'll see what happens. I'm acting like it's over, but it's just a bizarre situation all around. And, you know, it's frustrating because we're excited about the money that Cohen brings in, but we don't know who's dishing out the money and who to trust to dish out the money. You know, the guy they trusted, you know, was arrested for the DUI. So, allegedly, I guess I got to throw that word in. So, you know, we'll see. It's just a mess. This should be the Messian episode, not the Messian podcast, the Messian episode of the show.
So thank you, Jake. And before I go to you, Sam, I did pull up a map, and Brooklyn is actually east of Manhattan, and I stand corrected on that. And, you know, I did live in the city for a couple of years, and I worked the boroughs in a sales role for many, many years. How that got past me, how I forgot that that's east of Manhattan, I take complete accountability, and I apologize. But speaking of accountability, that's something Sandy doesn't seem to want to do. You know, he's saying that, no, it's not me, it's not Steve. Yes, he's not saying this, but we're all thinking it. You have a terrible track record of hiring. The people you've brought in are, have turned into a disaster, you know, for various reasons. How can he not, either he doesn't think it or he's just so brazen to deny it. So, Sam, going to you, what was your reaction to Sandy saying, not me, not Steve, it's Big Bad New York?
Well, I have many opinions about Sandy Alderson. I've voiced them on this podcast. And just to give a little summary, I think that he's way past his prime and completely out of touch with the game. However, having said that, he shouldn't be deflecting. If you're talking about the idea of especially the Mets job specifically being a career killer, it seems to be a career maker for the Yankees. But look at the track record with anybody who leaves having failed. The Mets, via, you know, via GM job or specifically, especially managing, coaching. Where do you see anybody picking up anywhere else? Nobody wants to hire anybody who's failed for the Mets. And so there is a little bit of truth to it in that specific category, that within these circles, quite possibly – everybody is still looking, and this is in many ways, I think, where I'm looking at the entire history of the Mets, and especially the way it's come together during this social media age. I don't think people like us very much. And I think people are looking at it at, like, absolutely not. It's going to fall apart in my hand. That's basically the way people seem to be looking at us in many ways. Now, mind you, that might just be the narrative. That might just be what's spinning. And we're going to get into all the machinations of this entire search and what people are thinking. But when you're actually looking at the idea of specifically New York and you're looking at it from the Metsian perspective, it kind of does make sense that that's the perspective of other people out there.
Thank you, Sam. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on this? Is Sandy just being a master deflector, or do you think there's something to it? Just tell me where you are with it.
I really want to let my frustrations run amok, but I'm not going to go there. I heard a lot of lawyers speak, a lot of sarcasm in Sandy Alderson's typical fashion, but I think there was also a lot of pragmatism that people just don't want to listen to. The Mets have been rebuffed. They've been turned down. Other people have just not been interested. It's odd. It's odd. And if we go back to day one, Rich, you know, I questioned Mr. Cohn's haste in bringing back Sandy Alderson. I thought, you know, I'm a forward-moving man. Been there, done that. That was always my opinion. But I also said at the time, the reason why he should wait and, you know, scour the earth for somebody who present, you know, the position is being presently filled by Sandy Alderson, because I said then, you know, this job, be it president of baseball operations or general manager, I thought this was instantly one of the most prestigious jobs available in the baseball market with the purchase of the team by Steve Cohen. And it hasn't worked out that way to date. Here we are in November. This month marks the official one-year anniversary of his purchase, you know, the official closing of the purchase. Here we are 1 year later. I didn't expect him to build a replica of Rome in 365 days, but I fully expected us to be beyond the condition we presently exist. Sandy Alderson, you know, just to reiterate, I wouldn't have brought him on from jump. I thought that was a mistake. People in the landscape of baseball already formulated their opinion about Sandy Alderson, his negotiating tactics, this, that, and the other. He's a familiar. He's a known quantity to the field. And I guess I was looking for Steve Cohen to bring in an unknown quantity, somebody who just might ruffle feathers, but certainly somebody smart, competent, and knowledgeable and adept to, you know, intermingling with other organizations and their executives and getting this thing done here in Flushing. Just hasn't transpired that way. I'm not ready to go all out on a blitz against Sandy Alderson. Again, there's a little bit of pragmatism that needs to rule part of our day. If you go case by case, again, they interviewed a lot of people. It just hasn't worked out for us for whatever reasons these individuals might have had. Either they're comfortable, no reason for them to move, this, that, or the other. So it's not to say that the Mets have undergone a feeble and futile search like once upon a time they staged back in the tens. I thought that was a feeble and mockery to the fan base of what they stage in their, you know, so-called search. I don't feel that this time. We're just unfortunate. I think the timing is piss poor, to put it plainly. There's a lot of people locked into their positions and not a lot of quality names available, or people not making themselves available. So I think timing is playing a great part in this, and just a little bit of bad luck.
Fair enough. So, okay, so guys, we, you know, we talked about that. Let's talk about the person who seems to be the leading candidate, Adam Cromie. So I think you're all aware. He was an assistant GM with the Washington Nationals. He has been out of baseball and practicing law since 2017. So he was an up-and-comer in the Nationals organization, no doubt. He's considered to be very bright with the analytics. He had done some director player personnel work there as well. So clearly when he was with the Nationals, he was highly regarded. But he's been out for 4 years. And there's another little thing that I'm going to ask you guys to comment on. I'm not sure how little it is. So the law firm he's with represented Chris Christie in the Bridgegate thing that happened a couple of years ago. Okay. Chris Christie is on the Mets board of directors, and from what we hear, is at least somewhat involved in this hiring decision. Now, does somewhat mean a lot? Does somewhat mean a little? We don't know. But he, but I think it's fair to say he has an influence, whatever, to whatever level that is. So, okay, here's my question for you guys. Adam Cromie, up-and-comer, out of baseball for 4 years, the whole Chris Christie Bridgegate thing. And also, as I throw it to you, if you'd like to comment on the David Stern thing that came out today, that maybe the Mets' secret plan is to wait until his contract expires with the Brewers at the end of next year, bring him in as president, let Sandy the job this year, bring Stearns in. That would solve the New York thing because Stearns is a New Yorker. There's a rumor out there that that's the master plan. So I know I threw a lot at you. But once again, what I'm going to ask you to comment on, and I'll go to you first, Jake, is Cromie being out of former National, out of baseball, Bridgegate, and then if you want to make a comment on the potential viability of the Stern situation, maybe the plan is to bring him in next year. So Jake, please take it from there.
Well, yeah, I got to say, when a guy doesn't have a Wikipedia page, that's concerning. It sounds bizarre. I know it does. But if you Google Adam Cromie, the guy doesn't have a Wikipedia comes up. That's not reliable. I mean, that's sad, first off. I'm semi-joking, but semi-serious to the fact that who is this guy? Like, yeah, sure, he's with the Nationals, but he's been out of the game 4 years. I don't get what the appeal is here. And then you throw Chris Christie's name, and then we're talking about the circus. I mean, do we need the king of the FUPA, you know, running the Mets now? I mean, give me a break with that. Chris Christie, we've heard him on the radio enough. I don't know why he needs to be involved in a Mets search for a GM. So, listen, if they hire Cromie, fine. Let's hope Sandy could guide him and Cohen could guide him and they get guys. But, that could be a 1 year and out kind of thing, which, you know, the Stearns thing makes complete sense. He was a Mets fan, grew up in Manhattan. So he does seem to be like the logical choice. He's put the Brewers in a heck of a direction. I mean, a lot of times you can't name half the Brewers roster, and here they are as one of the best teams in baseball. So he has an ability to get young talent and, you know, teams good like he did in Milwaukee. I like him. So maybe that's their plan, or they just stick with Sandy. But I don't know how much a part that Christie stuff plays, but if it does, that's a little bit alarming because there's just so many other layers to that. You know, Billy Epler is this other option that's out there, but I don't know. It's more of a Sandy and Cohen thing at this point to me. I think they're the guy, the head honchos here. And if they're around and Sandy continues to be around, they're in trouble. But the Stearns thing, I think if they do that route, Cromie, he's maybe here a year. Sandy's gone. They get a new president. They pair him with Stearns, or Stearns brings in a guy he knows. And then you're talking about a much better situation. But we might have to deal with one murky offseason here and then hope for kind of a reset button next winter.
Very good. Sam, your thoughts on let's call it, to hit it in three bullet points, on Cromie, Christie, and Stearns. Sounds like a band. Cromie, Christie, and Stearns.
Cromie, Christie, and Stearns. I think I'm going to start it tonight, actually. Let's go all to all the dive bars in the city tonight. So the only thing that, like, on surface, it's literally not substantive. On the surface of it, we never poach players of other teams. We always see other, Zach Wheeler goes, Justin Turner all of a sudden becomes a superstar. This is something we see on the player side. So the only place that I wouldn't mind it, and I'm looking at it from a positive perspective, is if this guy was up and coming, highly regarded in the Nationals, it might burn a little if he can have some success as general manager and maybe pair with David Stearns next year, if that is how the route goes. So what I'm interested to hear from Mike about is the part of the All in the Family thing that continues to happen within this Mets organization that Mike can list ad nauseum over the years. So that part also is interesting and understanding, even if it's still a little murky. But that's the only place that I see positivity, is poaching another, one of our rivals, front office people, if not the player. If not the players.
So, Mike, take away our newly formed band of Cromie, Christie, and Stearns. What are your thoughts?
Very quickly, to Sam's point, yeah, they got, under the Wilpons, they got to a point where I accused them and all their decision-making as being inbred because they refused to go off campus for a single idea, and all ideas died effectively. So, and Sandy Alderson is now the common denominator between the new regime and the old. He's the carryover. And that's where, some people smell some of the pollution here. But insofar as Christie, that's very interesting. I don't like the ties. Kind of reminds me of that old show on TLC, Connections. I don't like the behind the curtain connection here to Cromie. Cromie, yeah, he's been out of the loop. But you know what? And I'm just being a contrarian here. The other side to the coin is Paul DePodesta, who Sam brought up a couple of weeks ago. He left the Mets, and went into football, much less being out of the sport for 4 years. And, that's kind of working out well for Cleveland. So, being out of the game, that doesn't concern me so much. I'm just not impressed by this candidate. But then again, they've been through so many. And I'm kind of in Jake's camp on this, insofar as if Sandy Alderson / Steve Cohen, if they're settling on somebody, and that's the key word, if they're settling on somebody, if they're just making a hire for the sake of making a hire, I don't want it done. I'll go another year with Sandy Alderson. You know, I know we're not going to sink, but I'm not expecting to win the Davis Cup. So he's competent in that respect, and I can hang on another year until, you know, better candidates come along. But the last thing I want them doing is settling and hiring somebody just for the sake of going through the motions and turning around to the press and say, look what we did. That would be a huge mistake. Haste makes waste. And, you know, Crummy, whatever. Again, just to be a contrarian, Dee Podesta went to another sport in an executive capacity. So, you know, can he come in here and fulfill the job? Yeah, possibly. I won't deny him that. But he doesn't impress me. And I don't want to settle. Like I said, we have a new owner, and I have new expectations. If this was the old regime, my expectations would be polluted as the regime itself.
Very fair assessment. And, you know, with regard to the whole Cromie thing, tailing off of what you guys said, I wouldn't have a problem bringing him in. I'm not as concerned he's been out of the game for 4 years. He hasn't been out of the game for 40 years, so I'm not so concerned about that. But what I'd be concerned about is if the plan is, as you guys touched on, to bring Stearns in after next season, and then here comes Stearns with a guy that just got planted underneath him. He's not going to want to work with this guy in all likelihood. He's going to want to bring in his own guy, or person, I should say. And that we don't want more upheaval in the Mets organization. So I think you're right, Mike. If the ultimate plan is to bring Stearns in over the GM at the end of 22, just roll with what you have for now. Don't keep doing this and showing instability in the organization. I think we're had about enough of that, of the instability. So, guys, all right, so we've talked front office. And unless you guys have anything more to say, if you have any comments about the litany of candidates, any candidate in particular who has turned the Mets down, anything on that? Anybody want to make any comments about any particular candidate, think, you know, we let one get away kind of a thing? I'll take that as a no. I'll take the silence as a no.
It's like all the surface of the moon, really. You know, you can only see what's in within eye distance. What's over the hill, who knows? And it's kind of lonely up there, and that's where the Mets are right now. They're kind of lonely.
Like Neil Armstrong when he went up there, right? So
yeah.
All right. So, guys, I want to move to on-the-field matters. And so what's cooking right now? There's a lot, actually. And so I'm going to ask you a question with two names in it and ask you to comment, please. So, again, we'll start with our esteemed guest, Jake. So, all right, Jake, and same question, obviously, to Sam and Mike. Javier Baez, he certainly made an impact when he came. He didn't have the Cespedes impact because they didn't win the pennant, but he certainly showed what he can do. And Sandy, uncharacteristically, talked very positively about Baez yesterday, saying how he impressed him and he did all these different things. Rumor is that the Mets are very interested in bringing Baez back. I think Lindor has Cohen's ear, and Lindor wants his man on the team, and I'm good with that because I want Baez back. So do you think that Baez will come back? I think it's like an inside deal, which makes me very happy. Let's talk about Chris Bryant, too, because the Mets apparently are meeting with Chris Bryant out at the GM meetings. And, you know, I think of Bryant as a great player, a great hitter who's versatile, who has a tough time staying on the field because he has his back issues, and back issues are chronic. And people are saying that he could be the third baseman for a year or two, then move to the outfield when Brett Beatty's ready to come up for third base, which makes sense if you make use of his versatility. So, Jake, let me start with you. Baez, do you think he's coming back? Do you want him back? And what do you think about Bryant?
Yeah, I definitely want Baez back. He's got to return so he could find his other earring that might still be missing in the grass at Citi Field. But, I think it's a no-brainer, obviously. What happened. He came out, and then he, you know, played hard and had great numbers in the final couple of weeks there to make it interesting. But You know, you have to remember Robinson Cano is under contract the next 2 years, and unless the Mets buy him out, he's going to be a part of this team too. And I know he's like hated by a lot of people, but like he was a 300 hitter in the shortened 2020 year. When he's healthy and on the field, he's a 300 hitter. So I'm not writing off Cano yet either. A lot's going to depend on the DH. You know, you also have to factor in, we didn't discuss really, but there's probably going to be a lockout potentially coming up. So that's going to change things as well, and you know, collective bargaining agreement and whether to be a DH or not. So that factors in here, but Cano's going to be back. So, you know, if there is a DH, you're fine. Cano's at DH. If there's not, does he go to second? Does Baez play third? Does that put you out of the picture for Bryant? Do you sign Bryant and make him a super utility guy where he plays outfield and third base? I think his versatility is what makes him good now that he can play outfield and he's not an inept outfielder. He's an option to come back. I think Jeff McNeil is going to be a trade piece potentially if they don't decide to bring him back. But I would love to see them get Bryant and Baez, you know, bring back the Chicago boys, show them that New York pizza is better than Chicago, which we already know it is, besides the lunatics who think otherwise. But I would love to see them both here. The question is, can they afford it? Will they be able to pull it off? But I would think Baez wants to play here. It's New York. He likes the big market. I know he gave us a thumbs down, but I think if the price is right, he would stay here, and he realizes how big that can be for his brand, the endorsements behind it. You know, I think New York brings Baez a lot, and also playing with his guy Lindor, too. And I think he sees the potential here. You know, we talk about the Mets like they're this colossal failure, and yes, the GM search, and this is all a mess, but there is a core in place here that can be a playoff team next season if this is done right. This team isn't miles and miles away from being a playoff team. You saw the division, how bad it was. I know the Braves won the World Series on a hot playoff run, but they weren't a 95 win regular season team. So I don't think they're that far away. So I know I'm going on a whole spiel here, but yes, I do want Baez back, and I would like Chris Bryant as well if they can make it work.
And I appreciate what you're saying, and I also think I think the Lindor factor of being in Cohen's ear is huge. It's clearly the case. There was a post-game very late in the season, post-game show, where Lindor basically said, they thought you were talking to Steve Cohen. He said, yeah. And he said, are you talking about bringing Javi back? And he said, that's between me and Steve Cohen. You know he's doing it. And that's great. I mean, go for it. So, Sam, your thoughts on Baez, Bryant?
First of all, with Baez, I think not only I think that the Baez-Lindor thing exposed the Met fan for having the same hubris that we accuse a lot of these players as well as executives of having. I think we need to basically stop with this attitude of, you know, stop it and take the booze and just recognize that these, like everybody who's just like, they gave us thumbs down, I don't want to bring them back. It's just like these guys are literally revered in the places that they brought the cities to in 2016, individually, each. One who won a World Series, one who only won an American League championship. So how all of a sudden these two are the enemy of the state of the Mets, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I think that we need to look at the what we've, like I was saying earlier, with what other people are perceiving about it being a career breaker, maybe there is something to the way we behave too. And so that's what I have to say about Baez. With Bryant, I would love Bryant here. I also think, interestingly enough, even though with Carlos Correa, I will bring up that when he was doing that whole picture on social media of him hanging out in New York, and some Met fans were like, oh, look at that, and some Yankee fans were like, oh, look at that, if you do notice, he is wearing pretty much navy blue and white. So maybe that's even more of a sign that that's where he's leaning. However, I wouldn't mind that direction either. And, Rich, was there a third part of that again?
No, that was it for that. And, by the way, rumor is that the Yankees have made a very lucrative offer to Seager as a shortstop. So we'll see where that goes. So, Mike, bring us home, please, on Baez Bryant.
I'm cool with Baez. I'm cool with Lindor and Baez up the middle. I remember watching them play together during the World Baseball Classic. I remember wondering, wow, what would that be like in New York? So, you know, truth be told, I'm behind that if they sign him and retain him. Chris Bryant, I have no interest. Let me be the contrarian here. I have no interest in him. I see no use for him. If we're going to fork over money for him, then you might want to consider making an offer to Michael Conforto. We already have enough problems with people out of position on the left side of the infield, third base, left field, you name it. And, you know, unless you're going to purge other players and replace them with Chris Bryant, I don't see a need or a use for him. We have some prospects in the minor leagues who will be coming up shortly. I hope not this year. What I mean by shortly, obviously a year out from now. But you never know with their development. But still, we have prospects on the left side of the field. I see no need for Bryant. And nor am I interested in, you know, reforming the Chicago Cubs in Flushing. Again, I'm being the contrarian here. And as Jake says, Robbie Cano is still an issue. He's coming back, and he's still signed for 2 more years. They're either going to have to buy him out, or they're going to have to shoehorn him somewhere, and that's likely going to be third base. So we might have to ride this out with Robbie Cano at third base, and then we can graduate the prospects. You know,
and
so
Rich,
if you're
going to
bring in Bryant and stick him at third and left, what are you going
to
do with Dom? What are you going to do with Dom Smith, etc.? You know, so there's other moves that precede a need for Chris Bryant.
You know,
and yeah,
I hear
and Robinson Cano was what I was trying to touch on before. What I was thinking was the third thing, and I do wonder whether he's just going to be the older wunderkind off the bench, going in between all these different places, while you could do a lot of different moves. But we'll see how the front office goes. You know, when there's a front office.
Well. About Cano, Sandy said that Robinson Cano will be in Port St. Lucie, and we'll see where it goes from there. And, again, those weren't his exact words. That's what he said. He said he'll be in Port St. Lucie with a chance to impress us, and we'll see where it goes, which basically told me that they are not ruling out the possibility of using Steve Cohen's money to say, thanks, Robbie, we'll pay you and get the hell out of here. Based on that, I don't think they're going to be married to the contract. So – with that said, with Chris Bryant, he's a great hitter. That guy can freaking hit. But I see him as a guy who will not age well. I would rather have Baez than Bryant if it came down to one or the other. Bryant, to me, just seems to be an injury waiting to happen, and I think those injuries will become more profound and maybe keep him out longer as he gets older. That's my concern with Bryant. Although, look, would I love to have that bat in the middle of the order? Absolutely. So it gives me great pleasure at this point to bring on another guest. So we have the pleasure of having Mr. Keith Blacknick join us at this point. So let me tell you a little bit about Keith. Keith is a blogger, but most people know him for the great work that he does on the Queens Baseball Convention, the QBC. Keith is a co-founder of the QBC. So Keith, welcome. Welcome tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Just putting the finishing touches on the QBC for the week.
So what a great place to start. So, Keith, please tell us, I think most people listening to the show will know what the QBC is, but how's it coming together? When is it this year? All that kind of stuff. And who are some guests? If you can just enlighten us about the QBC.
Sure. The Queens Baseball Convention came out about because didn't want to do a fan fest. My cousin Shannon from Mets Police and I and Darren from the Seven Line decided to try to bluff the Mets into doing a QBC type event. When they didn't do it, we decided to go full blast with it. We did it ourselves. Darren had a step back, but he still supports us because of that's when he was getting his license with Major League Baseball for the Seven Line. And we just continued on having a fun event that we would want to see for ourselves as fans and what we would enjoy. My cousin eventually dropped out. My partner Dan stepped up into a full partnership with me, and we've had a lot of fun over the last few years. We've had Wally Backman, Mookie Wilson, Ed Charles, Ron Darling, Ed Cranepool, Chris Flexen, Todd Hundley, Brandon Nimmo, Todd Zeal, Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez as past guests. And for this year's QVC, which we're having this Saturday, November 13th, at Mulcahy's out in Wantagh, we're having Todd Frazier and also Gary Cohen and Ron Darling. They're both doing panels. All three of them are doing signings. We're also going to have the guys from SNY Hot Stove that are going to be there doing a panel. We're also going to have Nick Davis, the producer-director of the 30 for 30 Once Upon a Time in Queens. We're also going to have Mets book authors, Meet the Mets executives, which is Will Carafello and Jay Horowitz. Jay is also going to be part of the book author group, and we're given the Gil Hodges Award, which is the award that best exemplifies what Gil Hodges means to people and his characteristics and his background. We're giving it to Shannon Ford, who passed away a few years ago. And the other panel we're having is State of the Mets with Mark Healy, Lori Rubenson, Greg Joyce from The Post, Tim Healy from Newsday, and Tim Ryder from the Apple blog. I think that was everything. Sorry about the verbal diarrhea.
Well, at least you haven't been busy lately. No, I'm kidding. That's an amazing event. My God, you must be burning the candle at every possible end to put all that together. So good for you. And our best wish is that the QBC goes well. Last time you were on the show, I said this, and I'll say it again, that I just don't get why the Mets don't officially do it. And hats off to you and everybody who works with you for doing something like this. Just real quickly, the same story I told the last time. I happened to be in Chicago on business about 10 years ago, and they had the Cubs Fan Fest at the hotel where I was. My God, I mean, everybody, place crawling with people in Cubs Cubs gear, retired Cubs there, and the broadcast team was there. What a great event. And it kind of grinds my gears that the Mets don't do something like this themselves, but it also puts a smile on my face that you and your colleagues put it together. So great work, Keith. Love having you on here. And so let's keep going with the Mets. What we've been talking about so far, by the way, we have Jake Brown on as well, who is the co-host of the Amazing But True podcast with Nelson Figueroa. So we have quite a star-studded panel tonight. We've been talking about the Mets front office and how – we know that the problems they've had there with rounding that out. And we've just gotten to on-field matters. You probably heard we talked about Chris Bryant and Javi Baez. I don't know if you want to make a comment about that, your thoughts on either of those guys or both.
First, I want to say, hey, Jake, funny thing is now we, besides SNY being a title sponsor of the QVC, the New York Post has also become a sponsor of the QVC too. And we've actually had two half-page ads this week in the Post, which blows my mind.
You're welcome.
So I just wanted to, mention that, I think I might be contractually, have to mention it, but yeah, I mentioned it. Getting to the on-field stuff first. It's a mess. I mean, the whole Baez thing, was I happy with him doing the thumbs down? You know what? If you're going to boo the fans and it's going to be a joke within the team, that's something you could build on. It's kind of like Major League when they were against the ownership and they had their in-joke. Just keep it inside. You didn't have to say it during the press conference. I don't think Baez realized how bad he was going to get burned by it by the fans. I think it humbled him a little bit, and we can move on from that. So if the Mets want to re-sign Baez, I'm fine with it. I think that they should sign Bryant. I wanted Bryant before they had Baez too. I like Brian because he can play different positions. With Cano, I think Cano is going to pop up for a little bit. They're going to end up either eating his contract or make, if there's a DH, they're going to make him a DH. I can see Dom Smith and McNeil being expendable, trying to get some more outfielders and like real legitimate outfielders, not guys that are playing out of position. So the Mets have a lot of work to do, and I can't even wrap my head around it until the CBA is finished.
Oh, you know, I'm going to go there because I've been holding this, but since you just brought that up, Keith, the most recent thing on the CBA that came out today, and I'm going to roundtable this. We don't usually have this many people on, so I'm going to ask each of you just to say a few words about it. And, Jake, we've been starting with you, so we'll start with you here. The most recent volley from the owners on the CBA was they're saying get rid of arbitration and start free agency at 29 and a half years old. So that's going to be good for some players who are at 26 as opposed to waiting 6 years. Bad for Juan Soto, who came up at 19, right? Okay. But now the other thing is, instead of having arbitration, the owners are saying for pre-free agency players, pool of money together that is a function of the game's revenue. And what they came out with yesterday was how you divide that pool of money among those pre-free agency players is, you're sitting down, based on their F war. Wow. That's creative. So, guys, I'm going to ask you to comment on the 29-and-a-half-year-old free agency or free agency would start instead of 6 years, and what you think about this concept of getting rid of arbitration and going to a system where you're paid for performance using F-War. Jake, what do you think?
Well, first off, hi, Keith. Keith asked me to, you know, speak at the QVC, and I said I couldn't do it. I didn't think I'd be able to do it, and now I you know, hit him up today and realize it's in 2 days, so I'm going to go and wave from the crowd. Shout out to Keith for putting together a great event. I mean, it's a star-studded cast. I would have went with Figgy and did something, but Figgy is at fantasy camp down in Florida, so I don't think he's going to make it back in time on Saturday. I think his flight gets in too late, so he'll miss out. But if they go by F war, that's got to be one of the dumbest things in the history of sports. I think these stats are honestly ruining the game already, going to these things that – I haven't even heard of some of these acronyms. It's bizarre. It's like Morse code to me. But to go by that literally makes no sense. So I hate that. Let's just go with stats and not these other numbers that no one's heard of. I think 29 and a half is still kind of old. Like you said, like the Sotos, the guys who are coming up, you know, young, are, lose out so much. I already think it's kind of messed up the system. I think it should be like 26 and then free agency, something like that. Let there be more free agents. Arbitration is just like a way of saving owners and GMs money. And, you know, I shouldn't say, you know, these guys are still making a ton of money. But when you're playing in the minor leagues and making the dirt that they pay them, and now they're at least giving them housing and basic life necessities, it's a big deal when you get that first, you know, free agent paycheck. And you're going to make a guy wait till he's 30 just because of the rules. I just think it's dumb. So I'd say, you know, I guess it depends on different scenarios, but 26, 27 should be the age where they, you know, can become free agents.
Excellent. Sam, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, with free agency, yeah, I think exactly that. Like, it makes perfect sense. Like, if they get a chance to enter, then they should be able to. There shouldn't be anything like that. You know, and what was the other thing you were saying, Rich?
So they want to use – they're saying get rid of arbitration, and for the pre-arbitration players, have a pool of money that is a function of the game's revenue. So it goes up in a good year, down in a bad year. And who gets what out of that pool of money is a function of their F war. I'm making this up. If you have an F war of four,
okay,
you'll get more than a
So that's F4 specific. Going to the F war. The F part is just a website. That's all we're talking about here, is what a website is setting, is figuring out as the war. There's other Fs I can come up with for what I think about that, but I'm not going to say them right now because I don't want to interrupt the sacrum sacrimony of not cursing that we've had so far on this podcast. So I hate it. I absolutely hate it, and I just hope that they can, like, figure something out without these stupid ideas that are all of a sudden dominating more than we can realize, because, you know, there's plenty of people out there writing about all of this this F-war and B-war and rare war, whatever kind of, you know, Disney Marvel thing. That's what it basically is. It's just it's like baseball is getting so corporatized with these numbers that do have to do with the game, but are completely weighing down the decision making in every way, shape, and form. And it's just, if any of you, it was in the New York Post, I believe it was Mike Puma, the interview with Chili Davis, and Chili Davis was talking about basically the reason he got fired was because of Zach Scott, who ended up allegedly drunk driving. He didn't like that Chili Davis wasn't focusing very intently on the analytics. And here we are now. And you know what? Like, I know some people bring up the fact that Chili didn't make it with some other organizations, but it probably was a rush job in terms of firing. And look what happened.
Mike, your thoughts on the latest owner's proposal?
It's nonsense, and they know better, and they know it. We're fans. We care about the game. Major League Baseball owners versus the union is business. The union is a union with a capital U, and everything is collectively bargained. They will not tolerate or entertain such chicanery. Arbitration is not a perfect system. It needs to be tweaked or something, changed, adjusted. I'll agree in so far as that. But at the end of the day, this is a union. Like any other union, they will follow protocols, and it's owners versus union. That's the way it's been for roughly 130 years. This very discussion, outside of, you know, statistics and war and stuff like that, has been going on for over a century. The reserve clause is as applicable in this conversation as any other since its invention. I'm not saying it's making a comeback, no. I'm just merely saying that this is part of the collective bargaining process. And the game of baseball that's played between the lines does not exist at the bargaining table. This is about defining your work rules environment, work protection, work benefits, and things of that nature. Any instance in where a player stands to lose money, it is the owner's, is the union's obligation to fight against that. That's the way unions operate. It's not a friendly gathering of baseball players and retired players representing them. They have a charter. They have a constitution and labor laws, which they follow to the T. Therefore, and the owners know this. All they're doing is putting this out and sprinkling it into the public conversation to sway opinion. You know, they know this. They're half of the negotiating table. So on their part, nice try. But for those in the know, they know it's not going to fly. I don't think it's going to fly, because at the end of the day, it's business, ownership versus union, not players, union. And they, again, I can't stress enough, they have a charter and they have a constitution that they follow.
Well, in the article I read, the the writer said that one player agent said about that proposal that there's a better chance of Albert Pujols leading the major leagues in stolen bases next year. So the players definitely are not going to. So Keith, what do you, we'll get your opinion before we move to the more to the Mets on the latest volley in the CBA.
Well, it's just like the stuff that's going on in the film industry right now with IATSE versus the major studios. They'll throw out the worst type of deal for us. So, hey, this is what we want to do. This is what we're going to do. And then the union's going to come back and go, nope, we're not going to do that. Well, the owners will turn around and go, well, we're walking away from the table. Okay, we're going to strike. We're going to go authorize a vote to strike. If we strike, you know, it's basically, I broke this down talking to a friend in the film business. The first time you're talking to the, it's like talking to a kid when you're like, hey, don't do that. And then the kid still does it. And then you go to him a second time. Hey, I warned you, don't do that. There's going to be repercussions. Then the kid goes, okay, I'm still going to do it. The third time you're like, all right, that's it. I'm going to, there's this repercussions. And then the kid's like, oh, wait, you're serious. I'm going to back off. So basically what it is the owner's going, this is what we want. This is what you guys are going to have. And then you go back and forth negotiations. And it's like, oh, see, you got a better deal than what we were originally offering. Didn't you luck out? It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all playing the game. I have a feeling there'll be like a short little labor disruption, but they'll end up figuring out before spring training. But of course, everybody has to look like they're getting a better deal and be tougher with each other. It's billionaires versus millionaires. It just annoys me with the whole thing with it. So whatever happens, happens. As long as the minor leaguers get paid the right wage, the major leaguers can fight for them and themselves. So it's just one of those things with me, like, just work it out. It'll eventually work out, but just make sure as you're coming up that those guys are getting taken care of.
Well said. You're listening to the Metsian Podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike, and tonight we have two outstanding guests with us, Jake Brown and Keith Blacknick. And so, gentlemen, we usually go an hour. We're coming up on that hour mark. If it's okay, can we maybe do 15 more minutes? Is that okay with everyone?
Sure.
So we talked about the CBA, and there could be a work stoppage. And so let's talk – that's kind of depressing. Let's talk about the Mets. But then again, that's not, generally speaking, more uplifting, but that's a joke. So, all right. So let's talk about some more on-the-field Mets stuff. We talked about Baez and Bryant, and we'll say that we talked about the offensive side, although there's a lot more we could talk about. Let's talk about pitching. And I think that's a real problem, guys, because as many have said, and I think you'd all agree, and Sandy said this himself, any pitching help that the Mets are going to have in 2022 will have to come from outside the organization. They simply don't have the pipeline. I mean, David Peterson, you can kind of think of him as pipeline because he missed most of the season, but there's not a lot there. We don't really know. Is Tylor McGill really a major league pitcher? Maybe. Is he a number five starter? I don't know. Is he a reliever? Don't know. He had some really bad months where his ERA was over six, so we have to think about that. But we also think about this. This is where I'd like you to start off, Jake. Marcus Stroman. Mets aren't really in a position to let quality starters walk away right now. What do you think is going to happen with Stroman? I can't figure this guy out. Part of me says he's a New Yorker. You know, he loved it here. He seemed to really like it here. Mets can't afford to let him go. It seems like a match. But then, you know, he runs his mouth about Chicago. I read today the Angels might be interested. So I'm going to ask you guys, comment on Stroman, comment on maybe, you know, Syndergaard, what you think will happen there. He certainly should take the QO, I think, but we don't know that, and how they might go about addressing the pitching. So, Jake, take it away.
Yeah, I'd say 100% chance Syndergaard accepts the qualifying offer. He's out of his mind if he doesn't. Two innings over the last 2 years, and he's getting $19 million. You know, maybe he gets somewhere else 2 years, 30 or something like that, but I think he wants to prove himself for the year and then get the long-term deal. next year. So Syndergaard's coming back. You're going to have DeGrom, Syndergaard, Carrasco, Walker. So essentially you have four starters right there. That's not changing. Carrasco's just got to be better. He was terrible in first innings. He had the weird start to the year. You give him a break. He had injuries. He only pitched for 2 months. Maybe a full off season, he'll be better. Walker's here another year. He's here. You have basically four starters who are locked in. You might not be in love with them, but that's going to be what it is with Syndergaard taking the qualifying offer, which leaves room really for two more legit starters. You should have five, have another, and then you're going to get your depth guys. So I think they're going to give Stroman an offer, but I think other teams are going to outbid the Mets. I don't think the Mets are going to get into a bidding war on Stroman. I know a lot of people are saying, they shouldn't have to, but they shouldn't get a bidding war on Loop. Loop was like the MVP of this team last year. So I know he's a lefty reliever versus starter, but Loop was so good that you cannot let him leave. He was such an integral part of that bullpen. So he's got to come back to the bullpen to surefy that area. But I would say Stroman gets bigger money elsewhere. I would like him to come back. I like his, you know, his toughness, his grit, New Yorker. But I do think another team might give him more, and the Mets will say, oh, we're good there. And they go in another direction at starting pitcher. But I'd say they'll give him some offer around 20, 22, maybe somewhere in the 20, $25 million a year range. But maybe another team gives more a year and maybe another year or two, and the Mets don't go there.
Well, that's very consistent with what Sandy said. I didn't really like what Sandy said about Stroman, so I want Stroman back. He said, well, you know, Marcus did well, but he was very qualified in his comments, whereas with Baez, he was over the top of, you know, with his praise. So, Sam, take away on the pitching.
Well, you know, what's so interesting that we're talking about the CBA and talking about pitching, and basically the entire idea of a union really started with Koufax and Drysdale and La La Land, realizing as these actors made millions and had agents, and they themselves were performing on television because that's just what happened when you were there as pitchers for the Dodgers, star pitchers for the Dodgers. They held out at some point and got this entire thing going. And here we are talking about free agent pitchers. I agree with everything. I'm not going to repeat anything about Carrasco because I agree with everything that Jake said about Carrasco. So Stroman, I stand by my comments that the Mets, it doesn't make sense to say when looking at the starting pitching that they should let Stroman go. But yes, most likely something along those lines will occur about the contract. So. Or it all ends up coming together and, you know, we realize some of these guys that have an edge to them need to have an edge to them. Like, why are we denying this when that's what won us the last championship? So, and anybody else, I mean, you know, like Max Scherzer, he's not thinking geography. He's thinking of winning. Scott Boras, whatever. That would be pretty crazy, but again, the poaching of the other team, I wouldn't mind it.
Mike, Marcus Stroman, Mets starting pitching. Sam brings up a name that, you know, when I hear Scherzer, I roll my eyes. He's not coming here. I'd love to have the guy. He's not coming here. No. But let me throw this in for you and for Keith. How about Clayton Kershaw not getting a qualifying offer? He's on the open market. A lot of injuries there, though. So, Mike, take it away. Mike, you might be muted.
Sorry about that. Dollar in the jar. Cha-ching. My overriding concern is this, Rich. Can the Mets pull it together before Jacob DeGrom declines? And I think that predicates your course of action. Marcus Stroman, not signing Marcus Stroman would be akin to the mistake they made not signing Zach Wheeler. But as it's been said, there's probably another team that's going to outbid the Mets. I have more confidence in Tawan Walker than I do Carlos Carrasco. I'm not very high on Carrasco. So my overriding concern is, can the Mets pull this together before the decline of Jacob DeGrom? And that's the question I would seriously consider and perhaps guide me in how I'm going to go about assembling a winner. There's too many question marks here.
Keith, take us away on pitching.
Without even looking at free agency, are there anybody that's available that teams are trying to get rid of that might have worn out their welcome that you could trade for? Like, if you could trade a McNeil for them, or you could trade somebody that you know is not going to make the team, and you can just pick up somebody that needs a second chance in a new environment. You know, you got to sometimes think a little outside the box and not just with free agency. Stroman, he's Stroman. I like him as a pitcher. I'm not that much of a fan of him as everything else. So if he can keep pitching the way he's pitching, I think the Mets should maybe try to get him for 2 to 3 years and just give him a higher contract and nothing longer. So maybe if you front load a contract like that, that'd be more enticing to him, and then he can go for a bigger payday for a little bit longer after that. But I just – the whole free agency thing, I think you got to try to see if you can make a deal somewhere.
Luis Castillo is a name, Keith, that keeps coming up. The Reds, I don't know, if you believe what you read, the Reds are in a fire sale mode. They're going to let Castellanos go. There's rumor that everybody on that roster is available. So Castillo is a name that keeps popping up, and I know he'd be of interest. I wonder if they would take a young guy under team control like McNeil, maybe a McNeil, a J.D. Davis, a Dom, some combination of those guys to bring a Castillo in. So you're not surely relying on free agency. That's a good take. So, guys, I have one more on-field question, and then we'll start to wrap it up. So another name I'm hearing, and I'm going to ask you to comment on, is Starling Marte. He's out there, he's available, and the Mets are said to have some interest. Now, he led the major leagues in stolen bases last year. That's a dynamic that the Mets don't really have. Yes, Baez has speed, but doesn't steal a lot of base necessarily. Marte is still considered to be a base stealer. He's not so much a power hitter. He's more of an average hitter, get on base kind of a guy, maybe a leadoff kind of guy. And with Conforto, and you can certainly comment on Conforto, I think of him as gone. I thought of him as gone since October 3rd. With Conforto likely out, if you bring in a true center fielder like Marte, who is a true center fielder, although not a good one, not necessarily a statistically good one, you bring in a center fielder like that, you could push Nimmo over to right or left, and you can kind of retool the outfield that way and bring in that kind of like that natural leadoff hitter with speed, the kind of a guy that we grew up with, you know, thinking of in the leadoff spot. So Starling Marte, does he make sense for the Mets, or would you rather look in a different direction? So let's again start with Jake.
I love Starling Marte, and I think they've missed out on him multiple times in the past where they could have had him in free agency or trade or whatever it may be. So I think they're actually a couple of years late to Starling Marte, but I think the Mets are going to get outbid. I think he's, you know, there were rumors Yankees and Phillies are both interested in him, and I think one of those teams might just overpay and get him, but it's a no-brainer to get Marte. Top of the lineup, speed, it allows you, you know, Nimmo could go to left or right. You get better defense in center field with Marte. You keep Nimmo. I mean, a top of the lineup, talking about getting on base, stealing bases, moving guys over, getting hits, you know, Marte and Nimmo combined at the top of your order is dangerous. That's a lot of runs. You're moving guys over. You know, good things are happening. So I would love if they could find a way to get him. I would, you know, give him a 3-year, whatever, $60 million deal. And he is a very underrated player. I think he fell under the radar, too, in Oakland a little bit. But I think it's a no-brainer to get Marte.
Oh, my heart started beating faster when you were talking. I love that idea of having speed up top. Marte. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm feeling good now about the Mets in 2022. You helped me out there, Jake. So, Sam, let's go to you. You know, another thing that kind of pisses me off with the Mets is I don't like this who's playing left field tonight idea. I don't like, you know, Dom out there one night, McNeil out there. Neither one of those guys is a natural outfielder. So let's talk about the outfield, but give me a couple of comments on Starling Marte in particular.
Rich, tell me how you really feel. And first
oh
of all,
gosh,
I just want to give cred to you because I'm so happy that you brought Starling Marte up. I've just been waiting all night, basically. And look at us goo-goo gaga-ing over this. Like, I think that says enough. We've been waiting. It's time. You've all said it all. And I will also say, since I didn't comment on the loop part, but I will tie this into the Starling Marte part with the loop. There it is. You can't let another player go to the Phillies. Like, you have to stop that. Whether it's Starling Marte, whether it's Aaron Loop, whether it's maybe even Michael Conforto, but obviously that, you know, ties into the Starling Marte part. This is a very, can we stop it? Can we stop that in its tracks? And especially concerning the Aaron Loop part, since I didn't comment before when we were talking about it, but Starling Marte, it would also be nice if they didn't allow him to go to the Phillies.
How about Conforto on the Phillies? I'm hearing that one too. But anyway, Mike, Starling Marte, Mets, makes sense, yes, no?
I guess I'm going to finish out playing the role of contrarian tonight. I love the idea. What we're talking about here is old-school lineup building. Him at the top of the order, stealing bases. Chili Davis spilled the beans. Luis Rojas is getting his lineup scripted to him. Analytics does not like stolen bases. So what kind of team are we going to be? Just because we import Marte doesn't mean we're going to, you know, run and in the second position. Are they going to put a low strikeout, high contact batter? Are you going to put your best hitter in the third slot? Are you going to put your best slugger in the fourth slot? That's my point, because analytics is doing everything contrary to what we've been told our whole lives. So I would love to have Marte, but again, Chili Davis spilled the beans. The Mets were working with a script, and the guys behind the curtain don't answer to the media or the fans. So I don't know what to say. We need an outfielder if we're not going to re-sign Conforto. I'll agree with that. But I don't know what kind of team they want to build.
You know, you raise a good point. The pieces have to fit together. And you and I have talked about this, the three of us talked about this for years, that the Mets had good players that didn't necessarily fit together. Why are we using a first base and a left field all the time? And that is my bugaboo. So, Keith, your thoughts on Marte addressing the outfield?
My one thing I keep coming back to with the analytics and the players that the Mets have had in the past, I also think that we have to worry about who the manager is going to be. You need a manager that can take analytics and be able to deal with the people behind the curtain and still be able to put his spin on it and be able to feel with his gut too at the same time. Davey Johnson was a great example of that. He had a computer, he did analytics before anybody really knew analytics, and he was also managed with his gut at the same time. I think if you get a manager that can handle a player, like a player having an off day, like if we got a Marte as a Met, or we had, just imagine this, like Nimmo, Marte, money's no object, Bryant, Cano at third, Baez, Lindor, Alonso, and McCann in the field at that point. You know, you have hitters, you have guys that can steal base, you have power hitters. But somebody might be having an off day, and analytics is like, no, leave them in. But you know that the manager's like, you know what, I'm going to pull them out and know who has a hot hand. You're going to need somebody that can actually deal with all these analytic guys and also the players at the same time. And I think that's another thing that the Mets are really missing, a strong manager.
Well, we could dedicate a show to the manager search, but since it's come up, we could do 5 more minutes. I'm going to ask you guys, I'm going to go around the table and ask you if you had a choice, you know, Who is a good managerial candidate in your mind? And I know it's hard to do that because we don't have a GM in place yet. We don't know who the players are yet. And it's kind of hard to fit a manager piece into that. But let's go with it. So, Jake, I'm sure you have a thought on this. Who would you like to see manage the Mets in 2022?
Yeah, I said it on Amazing But True, Carlos Beltran. And I think, you know, Figgy gave me some good perspective when he played with him, how even back then in 2008, Beltran was like a manager. Like, he was always trying to see what's going on with the game, the lineups. He was basically, you know, doing a manager's job already while his career, while he was still in his prime. So it seems like he was meant for this. He kind of, you know, got the unfair, you know, the unfair hand with the Astros situation. So he would be my top choice if they don't want to go back down that path. I like Ron Washington, you know, just won a World Series. He's going to be in demand as a guy out there. I really wish they missed out on Bob Melvin. I mean, that was just, I mean, how do you not get it? I mean, he must have not wanted to come to the Mets, because if the Mets openly didn't try for him, it's a disgrace. They've already missed on him in the past. I thought that would have been a good move. So, yeah, Beltran's my first choice. I think it would excite the fan base, too. I know he doesn't have experience, but it's something different, and players have raved about him, play with him for being that kind of manager player. So he's my first choice, and then I think Ron Washington, you know, he's got the experience. So if you want to go that route, he's your backup.
You know, I think Carlos Beltran, it's crazy because Jeff Wilpon was the one who wanted Wally Backman. And then he finally got his pick, it sounds like, with Carlos Beltran, and it totally backfired on him. And here I am defending Jeff Wilpon, which is something that never should be done. But at the same time, the fact that I heard he would have wanted Wally Backman, I kind of like that, but I understand why Wally Backman wasn't in there. And anyway, going back to 2008, Jake, I just wanted to say, tell Figgy that in 2009 he should have made the team out of spring training. It was ridiculous. I just wanted to pass that on to him. I wouldn't have a problem with Carlos Beltran, especially considering that Nelson Figueroa has that insight. I wouldn't mind Ron Washington, especially how in demand he's going to be coming off of that. I think he hasn't gotten a fair shake as manager. I think he, you know, he unfortunately had, you know, similar to the other side on 1986, the Red Sox with the Texas Rangers. And I wouldn't mind that either. I think that would be a good direction to go and give him another shot. I would like that too.
Great. Mike, manager.
I'm rather unimpressed with the field. What I do want is somebody who's going to command the locker room and is going to put his foot down or her foot down and regain control of the dugout narrative, something which Luis Rojas could not do. So I can only answer that in type form. I'm unimpressed with the available candidates or the ones we've spoken of to date. On behalf of Metsville, and I do mean this in all sincerity, I still think Wally Backman's the best guy for the job, baseball-wise, strategically-wise. But we know that he won't get this job. He's been cleared. That doesn't matter, I guess, anymore. And that's why the Long Island Ducks retained him. He's been cleared of everything that was brought against him, et cetera, et cetera. So I want somebody who's going to reestablish control of the locker room, and the narrative flows through the manager, not from some concocted hitting coach, not from players having to answer for Ratcoon or anything of that nature. That was all folly. And that was a lack of control, commanding control, first and foremost by the manager. And then the front office has to step down and intercede. You know, there's a lot that should stop and start at manager, not front office. And that's the kind of person I want. Now, is this going to be a young team, a veteran team? Well, you hire accordingly. But I'm not out in this present condition. I'm not open to experimentation. And to me, that's what Carlos Beltran represents, experimentation, somebody with no experience. I don't begrudge him for his lack of experience, and I'm not knocking him. In this present condition that the Mets find themselves, I just don't think he's the right man for the job. I want somebody who's going to seize control of the player roster and the 26 men that are assigned to him any given day. That's what I want. And I don't want a blasé attitude or, you know, a scripted speech at any press conference. I want somebody who's going to speak with conviction and say what is on his mind. I don't want somebody who's going to coddle. I don't want them belittling players, but I don't want them coddled either. And I don't want to hear excuses being made for players. I want to hear, well, you know what? He's been struggling. He's going to sit for a couple of days while such and such starts. I want it plain and simple again. I'm tired.
And on the Wally Backman front, by the way, Wally told me personally this year on the show that with Sandy there, he will never have the job. Sandy does not like Wally at all. They have a terrible relationship. So while Sandy's here, the Wally Backman thing will never happen, unfortunately, because I do like Wally Backman.
Sandy hates Wally.
I'm sorry. And there you go. Sandy Aldis's mere presence is part and parcel to this whole problem. So there's my answer, Rich.
Yep.
Very Keith, yep. I have a feeling that when you have all these Mets fans together on Saturday, the topic of manager may happen to come up. So where are you with the manager situation?
I'm going to throw out somebody's name that you haven't heard a lot. Super Joe McEwen.
Please. Why not?
You know, he has the experience, you know, being a bench coach. He's been around the game. He was a scrappy player. He knows what needs to be done like that. I feel that he was overlooked in the past when Callaway got the job. I think Joe might have been a better manager at that time. I also think that Edgardo Alfonso might be a good manager for this team too. I think he knows when to turn on the charm, and I think he knows when to turn on the hey, look what you did now. Now you're going to get that irate, Fonzie.
Both good choices. I think you can make an argument for either. So you have been listening to the Metsian podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike, and we've had a great show, great time talking Mets baseball. Brown and Keith Blacknick of the QVC. So, gentlemen, at this point, typically what we do is we turn to our guests and ask them for what we call our shameless plug. So we'll start with you, Jake. So if you could just remind people of what it is you do in Metsville and where people could find it and that kind of thing, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It was good to talk about the Mets here after, for me, a month break. You can follow me at Jake Brown Radio on social media. You can listen to, we're on hiatus, but whatever big Mets news hits, we'll be back for special off-season episodes. Amazing But True on Twitter. Follow the podcast. We've had everyone on from Piazza to Terry Collins to Pete Alonso. We've had, you know, a great guest list so far. It's me and Nelson Figueroa. During the season, we're twice a week. We did live shows this year. We did a 9/11 fundraiser podcast where we raised 13 grand for Tunnels to Towers. So we expect next year, if we're back and the Post likes us still and they keep me around, that we'll be back next year, do some more live shows, probably do some shows outside the stadium, whatever bar replaces McFadden's. I've heard it might become the Ainsworth. So we'll see what happens with McFadden's. You went from drinking shots there to getting the shot, the vaccine, McFadden's. So check out Amazing But True. If you're a Jets fan, Gang's All Here. I do with Brian Castello, Jets Podcast, Giants, Blue Rush, Lawrence Stein, me and Paul Schwartz, Rangers, me, Ron Duguay, Molly Walker. So we have the New York sports scene cover with our New York Post sports podcast. And I guess I'll see some of you guys Saturday at Mulcahy's at 11 a.m. for QBC.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jake. And Keith Blacknick, thank you as well for joining us. If you could remind people, obviously this is your big weekend. Where can people find you on social media? What do you want to tell us about where people can get tickets for the QBC, that kind of thing?
All right. On Twitter, I'm at MediaGoon. We have at QB Convention for the QBC's Twitter handle. It's the same thing on Instagram. We have the QueensBaseballConvention.com where you can get info and tickets about the QBC. We got the MediaGoon.com, which is my blog. Basically, everybody just needs to know tickets to get into Mulcahy's are $25. And then we have tickets for autographs. And we're also selling baseballs, and we have vendors and photos and artists, and it's going to be a fun time. So doors open at 11 o'clock on Saturday, QueensBaseballConvention.com to get your tickets. Hope to see everybody there. It should be a great time. And if anybody has any questions, you can hit me at MediaGoon@gmail.com.
Keith, what is the food situation? I need to know before I go, you know, should I eat before, or is it going to be great, you know, Long Island food there?
So they're not doing their – Mulcahy's isn't going to do their traditional sit-down. It's going to be more grab-and-go. So there'll be, like, mozzarella sticks, hamburgers, basically all the – like, if you went to Mulcahy's for to go to a concert kind of thing, they have that kind of food. It's still going to be high-quality food. But it's just going to be easier to eat than having to sit down and cut into it.
Touché.
Well put. All right. So thank you, everyone. And typically we wrap up the show with a last word where, you know, one last thing that's on your mind or you'd like to throw out for consideration. I think, Keith, you've been on, you know, about this. Obviously, Jake, first time for you, so we'll go to Keith first. So, Keith, I have a feeling what your last word might be, but I'm going to let you say it. So what's your last word for the podcast tonight?
Come to the QBC, QueensBaseballConvention.com.
That's what I thought. Thank you, Keith. So, Jake, your last word for tonight, what's going on State of the Mets, your podcast, what would you like to leave people with?
Yeah, I'd say enjoy your off season. Don't stress about this Mets front office thing. They will get players. They have money. Some people want to jump off a bridge every day. I'm like, good God, like, let's just enjoy our lives a little bit. You know, it's 60 degrees here in New York in November. Let's take the good temperatures, even though it's dark by, you know, 4 p.m. It's already, you know, it sounds like 9 p.m., which is annoying, but just enjoy your lives. Everything will be fine with the Mets, and they will be back to the promised land soon. So just don't lose sleep during this crazy, hectic time. And there may be a lockout, so it may the lockout may be good for us Mets fans. Give us more time to try and get normalized.
Perspective. I like it. Thanks, Jake. All right, so Sam, your last word for this evening.
Peace. Ironically, something I may get at the Queens Baseball Convention. It's just going to be nice to be in that environment again. And, yeah. That's and thanks again to Jake and Keith for joining us.
Mike, bring us home with the last word.
I would like to reiterate what Sam said. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Jake. Thank you for your insights this evening. Thank you for your time. If there is indeed a lockout, Winter League Baseball is in business. Mexico, Puerto Rico, DR, Venezuela, all open for business. The winter league seasons have begun. I'm a big fan of that. But if I may, Sunday I will be hosting a podcast with Peter Gorton, the founder of the John Donaldson Network. As we know, the Hall of Fame vote is coming up this December 5th, Golden Era and Early Era selections. And I will be hosting a podcast focusing on John Donaldson, one of the greatest Negro League pitchers that hardly anybody has ever heard of. Incredible accomplishments. Through his help, I replayed the 1918 season with the Brooklyn Royal Giants on my blog, the Brooklyn Charlie Blogger, and there's two other players from the Brooklyn Royal Giants that are on this ballot as well. So we'll be speaking of that, and, you know, in a greedy sense of way, I will be focusing on the Brooklyn Royal Giants, but we will also be fully embracing John Donaldson's career and try to finally get this man into the Hall of Fame. Somebody with over 5,000 documented strikeouts, over 400 documented victories, pitched 30 consecutive no-hit innings, numerous no-hitters, and it's a shame, like it would be in the case of Gil Hodges, but neither of these men are elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame come December 5th. So through the magic via of Bedford and Sullivan, thank you, Sam Maxwell, for letting me hijack his podcast. I will be having that this coming Sunday. Again, I will be hosting Peter Gorton of the John Donaldson Network. If you're interested, give a listen. I'll be putting out more information in the coming days. Thank you.
Great work to do. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Mike. Great time talking Mets baseball tonight. Most importantly, thank you to all our listeners, whether you're listening live or listening wherever you get your podcast. So with that, signing off for what will be the first of quite a few episodes during the off season. Things will evolve, folks. You don't know what direction this whole thing will take, but we'll be here to talk about it. So, Sam, we only end this podcast in one manner. I'm going to turn to you, my friend, to do that. So good night, everyone. And, Sam, please take us out the only way we know how.
I can't wait to say this with a collection of Mets fans on the island that's long, but let's go Mets. Thank
let's
you all.
Go Mets.
Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Jake. Later. Later, Mike. Later, Rich. Thank
let's
you,
guys. Let's go QBC. Let's go Mets.
Good night, everyone. Go to the QBC. Take
Adios.
Care. Have a good night. Bye now.